The following is a production of Snake Tree Media. This is Urgent Frequency, the Sonic sit-rep for Urgent Fury, the hottest tactical gamer community on the World Wide Web. And now, here's your host, Commander Claymore Fury.
Hoo-yah, Frequency Freaks! I am Commander Claymore Fury, and this is Urgent Frequency for the week of Sunday, August 12th, 2012. You know, there's two things that I try to cram into each and every episode of Urgent Frequency. That's information and entertainment. Well, this episode, episode 98, as we count down to my 100th episode, is chock full of both as I sit down with Mark Christensen, a.k.a. Rigger 82, the Off-Duty Gamers, where we talk about everything from the forthcoming Battlefield 3 expansion pack, Armored Kill, Medal of Honor Warfighter, and yes, the zombie apocalypse. I love the way you talk when you talk that talk. This is Urgent Frequency.
Hey guys, it's Audrey Keo from PlayStation Network's Core and Fearnet.com.
Hi, this is Raider from the Sea Snipers.
Hey, this is Glenn from the PlayStation Nation podcast.
This is Enidub.
Hey, this is Eduardo Vasconcello.
You are listening to Urgent Frequency.
Urgent Frequency.
Urgent Frequency.
Urgent Frequency.
Only on.
Only on.
Only on.
Urgent Fury.
Urgent Fury.
Urgent Fury.
UrgentFury.com.
I am Commander Claymore Fury for UrgentFury.com. The brave men and women in our nation's armed forces made a commitment to protect us and our freedoms. Many will come home with missing limbs, severe burns, or traumatic brain injuries. The Wounded Warrior Project was created to help and support these injured heroes through programs and services that help make their recoveries that much easier. Regardless of your position on the war, our wounded veterans deserve our support. To learn more, call 1-877-TEAM-WWP. That's 1-877-832-6997. Or visit WoundedWarriorProject.org. Hoo-yah.
Spoof that flashback.
Oh, yeah. The week's over. Your boss's complaints are silenced for another 3 nights. And now you want to blow that hard-earned money by throwing it at women who make more in one night than you do all month. That's right. You need to head up to Southern Strawville and walk through the gilded doors of 101 Damnations Gentlemen's Club. At 101 Damnations, you'll see 100 plus one oddities that'll titillate your sick fantasies to no end. Come see October, the Brazilian hot body with three breasts on her neck. The always lovely Bam Bam. She's ready to shed her eczema flakes of lust all over your face. This Saturday night, don't miss the erotic caramel tub wrestling match between Hot Ones and Lucky Bear. The rematch between these conjoined twisted sisters that everyone's been praying for. And finally, backed by popular demand, Miss Hogwild returns to 101 Damnations for 1 week only. And everyone knows there's no other one-legged midget that can charm that brass pole like she can. These and 96 other wonderfully wrong women are waiting to make your off-the-beaten-track fantasies a little more beatable. Call 1-555-HOT-SICK today for party reservations tomorrow. All nude, no pasties, and still offering a full top-shelf bar on the premises. Because at 101 Damnations, the more you drink, the better they look.
Urgent Frequency.
Alright, men, open fire! Who's hurt? Raise your hands! Without the attitude.
Commander Fury?
My guest tonight is one of the few repeat guests I've had on the podcast. He's a former paratrooper. I don't even know if that's the proper terminology, with the United States Army, who now acts as CO of the Off-Duty Gamers, a group of active duty and veteran military gamers who have developed quite a following in the mainstream gaming community, mainly because of the perspective that they bring to tactical gaming. Later this month, we'll meet one another face-to-face as we hit the beaches of Seattle, Washington for PAX Prime, where we will be gathering advanced intel on a bunch of cool stuff, including getting the scoop on the Armored Kill expansion pack for Battlefield 3, and of course, October's Medal of Honor Warfighter. We're pretty excited about that. He is a self-appointed zombie warrior, and we will talk more about that, and I consider him a friend and a confidant. He is Rigger82, a.k.a. Mark Christensen of the Off-Duty Gamers. Hello, sir. Welcome to Urgent Frequency. Are you doing okay besides the voices in your head? Are you doing okay?
Yeah, so far so good. The medication's good. I think we're at a good level. All busy and ready for PAX. I think it's going to be a good time. I think there's some good stuff coming out this fall, so I'm excited.
Now, if you can, and then we'll get more into Warfighter and stuff like that. Last time you were here, we talked about your relationship with EA / Medal of Honor. In the intro, I was going to put what your working status is with the gang at EA and Medal of Honor, but why don't you explain exactly what it is you've been doing since your last appearance here on the podcast.
As you know, the Special Operations is actually doing a lot of the work with Medal of Honor, and Greg Goodrich and the team are working with those guys really closely. So they need a front-facing military thing, and we kind of fill that role. And so what I do is I write the blogs, and if you've been watching on the Medal of Honor website, the blog we've been doing kind of listing out the different tier one operators from around the world. And so I'm writing the blog background and kind of refining it. It's things you can mainly find across the internet if you dig hard enough, but we're just trying to put them into bite-sized bits and give you a sense of who is JTF2 and who is the GIGN and all the different groups that you're going to see in Warfighter. So that's, I'm doing more of the front-facing interface stuff. It's more public, and working with those operators, I get on Skype with them, which is really cool, and make sure that they're not mad at me because they send people in black helicopters and we don't want that. just make sure that we're representing them with the public side that they can't normally represent.
It's funny you should say that, because I wish I had, I was going to actually have some of this interview with, I can't remember the guy's name now. It doesn't really matter, because I think he might be an idiot. He reports for GameSpot. Back at E3, he and Greg Goodrich, they had some problems. And of course, like I said, one of the things that makes you guys so special as far as the Off-Duty Gamers and what you guys do and what niche you guys fit into as far as tactical gaming is concerned, I think that most game developers now that are working on any kind of tactical shooters, it seems like that's the approach they take. Instead of reading a book or Googling tier one, they actually reach out to the military community. It seems like you guys are such a conduit for that. But now, this guy, again, if you can remember his name, you're welcome to mention it. But if you don't care, I mean, we talked about maybe talking about this, so we might as well just go ahead and start off with that. Goodrich took exception to this guy's review of the game, and he actually had a sit-down with this guy. And you can find that on the web. As a matter of fact, I'll even try to link it in the blog post for this particular episode. But talk a little bit about that, and then talk a little bit about your take on it, and then I'll try to expand on it if I can.
Well, the irony of that situation is the guy hadn't even played the game. He had watched over his shoulder, and he hadn't really watched the trailers. So he had a very limited knowledge, and he hadn't played the 2010 version, so he had almost no basis for his commentary. His comments were more about, oh, well, it's not realistic. And one of the things that Greg really goes after is authentic versus realistic, and I think that's an important distinction to make. Authenticity is trying to say, when you put something in the game, it's based on real life, and it's as close as you know they can get it within the bounds of a game. And that the game still has to be fun. If the game was realistic, there would be large swaths of boredom that things that don't go on or that you wouldn't be able to, you know, go and do. You'd be sitting around waiting on. So realistic. Nobody wants a realistic game. Even in a military sim, no one wants a realistic game. So authenticity is just about staying close to what the subject matter is and being faithful to it. And this guy just, you know, went after the stuff about, what was his big point? I think his big point was about health regeneration. Like, oh, that wouldn't really do it. In the game, you're going to be able to have a hardcore tier one mode, and that's not going to be the case. So it's a matter of having those different steps and levels. Obviously, everyone knows you're not going to respawn. So that's kind of my point. This guy did all the work for me. I think what's funny was is if you're a student of psychology or body mechanics, if you watch Greg in that interview, you can see he actually wants to choke the life out of him.
And again, I will try to get that link in the blog post because it impacted me as a not only as a fan of the Medal of Honor franchise, but again, somebody who openly and vigorously tries to support the military and the cause. And you can tell that not just Goodrich, but the entire team over there. And I've always said this about Medal of Honor. The one thing about that franchise that I've always loved is I've actually learned things. I consider myself something of a student of military history. I really love the European theater, in particular World War II. And I remember playing the Medal of Honor, the early Medal of Honor series. It taught me so much. As a matter of fact, the Smithsonian was actually involved, I think, became involved in the franchise on Frontline. And so the missions and the some of the names and places and things were as you said, they were completely authentic in the presentation and everything. And it just, you know, like you said, the guy kind of he kind of did all the work for us here, but he basically just went on this semi-political he kind of turned everything into this semi-political commentary that really had nothing to do with the game. And a lot of people don't realize, and this is something I learned from the few shows that I've been to, when you go play a game at a gaming show like this, you have to understand that a lot of times it's an incomplete product that you're playing. It's usually like an alpha build or something that is pre-beta that not everybody's going to play. And plus, they kind of tweak the settings to where your health regeneration is probably going to be greater than it would when you buy the game out of the box. And the reason they do that is they want you to be able to experience the game without dying repeatedly, this, that, and the other. So that's something that people need to take into mind. But you've got to see this interview because Goodrich, he does, you can tell how passionate this guy is about trying to recreate a completely authentic experience through these games. And speaking of authentic, man, we last time you were here, we were right in front of the release of Battlefield 3, or maybe right behind it, but Battlefield 3 has come out, and of course, we've all got to play it for hours and hours. We were talking about the level 100, and we'll get into that in a second, maybe, but so far, what has DICE and Electronic Arts, what have they done right with Battlefield 3 so far, man?
I think scale. I really think scale. The Frostbite engine's been great and giving you that detail and destructibility. And I think that was the game changer in the industry. But scale for me is where it's at. I personally, and I think for a lot of military players, we like to have more room. It's promotes a more thoughtful play. You have to use your brain. It's about tactics. There's time to move as a unit. When you get on these little tiny maps and it's individuals, and that's what happens, it's individuals. There's not enough time for you to kind of work your way together and do things together. So Battlefield 3 really just gives you that chance to say, I'm going to go over here. Hey, everybody, meet me over here or get these vehicles together. And then we're going to concertedly do something that isn't immediately in the public space where you're getting pummeled and you don't have time to even get organized.
I agree. I play on console, you play on PC, so you have a better perspective in terms of scale. But even on the console, I think there's one moment during every session where I kind of go, wow, what, we've seen two expansions so far, and we got the third expansion coming up. And you guys on the PC have to be nuts about this, because even the guys on the console are nuts about this, because we have Bandar Desert, which will be featured. It's the featured map in the Armored Kill expansion coming up in September for Battlefield 3, what they're calling the largest map in Battlefield history. Have you had any experience with this map, and what can you tell us about that?
I have. We at E3, we got a chance to go in there and play this this map, and I'll tell you, gave me goosebumps. We having all the vehicles and having the heavy armor and just this massive space to work in, and a C-130 orbiting that you can actually pummel people from orbit. So I'll tell you, one of the things we had fun, Spartan and I went into this, and it's about, I think it was 10 people 10 people in the room. So we're across the room from each other, and the game starts, and immediately he and I do the normal thing that we do, and that's pull one ear cup off of the headset, and we start yelling at each other. And it's about, I'm going here, I need a pickup. We're yelling. We don't even notice it. We're just having fun. He's yelling. He's telling me where to go. He's telling me where he's getting engaged. We're back and forth. We're just kind of focused. And when the smoke clears, the lights come up. We've been playing against, I think it was the QA, the Romanians or whatever that they put us up against. He was at the top of the leaderboard. We had supported the hell out of him. They never got off of their marks. We kept them buried the whole time. And we turned around. The lights came up. And there's Patrick Bach, the executive producer, and a couple of the devs, and they just got this big evil grin on their face. And they're just, they said it was awesome just listening to us scream at each other across the room and bark out orders and tell us what direction we were going. But I mean, I think that is probably a huge credit to the game. In fact, that you get immersed in that. And that's what we really want. That's what we want to see in the game. I want to forget where I'm at, and I want to just feel like I'm in that environment where it just gets natural and we work together and there's time to do that.
We talked about scale. When you say biggest map in Battlefield history, that's a pretty bold statement, but how big? Like you mentioned, they have the C-130. Can you speak to the functionality of that, by the way? Because I think a lot of people who saw the trailer are just like, oh my gosh, C-130. But speak to the scale and then maybe mention some of the vehicles that you can mention and some of the things that you saw in the game, and talk a little bit about how the C-130 works and things like that.
We only got a portion of the map. So it's still fairly large. It's the beginning of that map where you're on the coast. So you're coming off the ships and things. And if you think about all of the different vehicles that you already have, augment that by a bit more. There's more of them around. So it's just a very armor heavy. But you also have all the other vehicles that go after because you have to actually have tank busting. But the C-130, okay. First off, from years ago when you were playing, Desert Combat or what was it? You could actually fly the C-130. But if you had somebody who didn't know how to fly or got sick of it, then they would just crash it. So what they ended up doing was they put this thing in an oval orbit. So it's not constantly centered around that main portion of the map, but it comes into the ellipse and you can kind of get in there. You can either jump from it and use it as a mobile spawn point, or you can get into the 25 millimeter and the 40 millimeter? I think so. So you can sit there and you can get into those two guns, and then you go ahead and just dump barrages on targets as you're making the orbits.
Now, do you know if it's, this kind of seems like a strange question maybe, but is it an unlock, or is it something that is just in the map, or how exactly does that work?
No, it's just in the map, and then it can be shot down. So if you take a jet up, you can go ahead and you can take it out. It'll take damage, and it has a respawn, so it's out there, and you can treat it like any other vehicle, but it doesn't take off from a location. It's not like you get into one of those and you pilot it to there. So it'll be there, and then you can spawn into it. But then if it goes down and they take it out, it'll respawn after a certain amount of time and it'll be back in orbit.
I guess let's move to Medal of Honor, man. Like you mentioned, you've been doing a lot of the blog work for them over there at Tier 1 Central. I'm a huge Medal of Honor freak, and we have we've seen little bits and pieces here and there. Have you had a chance to take it for a test drive yet?
I got in a little time on the Alpha and watching over people's shoulder when I visit their Danger Close studios, and it's looking awesome. We saw a little bit of it at E3. Got to play it there, obviously, for people who were doing that, so you saw some of that footage. The devil's in the details, that's all I got to say, is that they've got the little things down, tuned in really well, and this new fire team mechanic where people are going to wonder about that. They're going to say, is there a cheat, like a wall hack, where you can see the outline of a friend or an enemy through a building or a number of buildings? But what they've simulated is the interaction between two very tightly trained Tier 1 operators, so that you always know where this person's going to be, how they're going to act. In the real world, you would always know where that guy's going to be. So in the game, to simulate that, they've given you that outline. And that way, out of the periphery, you can see where that guy is. If he goes around a building, you see where he's at, and you maintain that contact. And then if he has contact with somebody, then the outline's in red where he's in contact. It's like if he was on comms telling you, those guys are here and I'm engaged. So it'll be a little different. I have a feeling that some people will probably look at it like it seems like wall hacks, but it's about communicating how Tier 1 operators interact.
ultimately what you're saying is, getting back to the authenticity thing, it's not necessarily an unfair advantage. It's something that if I was in a fire team, if you and I were in a fire team and I was injured or I went down, you would know it and you would have a chance to react to that. And that's ultimately what that whole idea is, right?
Absolutely. You guys are wired together. I mean, that's the bottom line. These guys train constantly together. And even when they don't train together, they train in such a similar way that they just know how each other's going to react. And so in the first game, in 2010, they had some trouble. They have certain sections of the game, and Greg can always tell you the story. It's funny. They would say, we want to know if in this situation, what would you tell that guy? You know, if you just covered him, you took out the bad guy and you saved his butt. What would you say? And he goes, the operator said, nothing. We just know what we're thinking, and it's just kind of like that unspoken thing. So he was frustrated because he's like, well, how do I get that across in a game? These guys work together that much that they just know what they're thinking.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where this game is at, and they're taking that tack. How do you get that across to the people, the gamers, that working together is so much stronger than being individuals? And how do they bind that in a group of people that aren't used to working together?
I know that one of the, I can't remember where I saw this or where I read this, but I was reading something about Navy SEALs, and when they are in their initial training phase, buds, the worst thing that an instructor can call you is an individual, because that's ultimately singling you out, some pun intended, but it's ultimately pointing out that you are only worried about yourself. You're only focusing on yourself when, in fact, you should be worried about the other guys in your boat crew or whatever they call it. The United States, we work in concert with a lot of these other forces, and so the training is very, very similar. A lot of the techniques, a lot of the tactics are very similar. I'm assuming that's what will come to bear in the game, and that's something that will be highlighted in the game. I'm sure you, being a military guy, you're looking forward to that.
Absolutely. There's always competition between the military, even at every level, and I guess it's weird to call it competition, but that's what it is. These guys, everybody wants to be the best of the best. These are type A personalities on steroids. So if you take your best of your best and they're challenging each other, then you take them and you say you're going to work against the world's best of their best. Everybody's going to work really hard to make each other just that much better. And that's what you're going to see here. And I think what we're trying to do with this one is get that sense of there's other countries in the world that have these kind of forces, and introduce the U.S. market to them, and then forge a little competition. I mean, this is very much like if you played FIFA and you're doing the World Cup. You're going to root for the home team. You're probably going to play the home team, but you might go and play the other team because you would like to find out what the German KSK does.
I think it just makes it more relatable on a global level, because if I'm some guy from Canada, you know, it's fun to play as a Navy SEAL, but maybe I'm not going to relate to that as much as if I actually play as a JTF2 member and things like that. So I'm looking forward to that, and it should be noted that 2010's Medal of Honor was developed, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it was developed, was it solely DICE, or was it kind of like DICE and Danger Close? It was more of a collaboration between the two. But now this particular game, Warfighter, it will be developed completely by Danger Close, and they've done it on the now famous Frostbite 2 engine, which of course they use for Battlefield 3. And from everything that I've seen, man, it looks great. But now this is the first game that Danger Close has done by themselves, right? Even though it's a continuation of 2010's game, I think it follows the story of Preacher. I could be wrong about that, but
yes.
But now this is the first game developed completely by Danger Close, is that right?
So the first one, Battlefield 3, was in production, obviously, and the new engine was there. So what they did is the Danger Close team had the storyline. They did all that. They did the single player, the campaign mode, and then they guided the front ends, and then DICE actually developed with the Frostbite engine the multiplayer. So it did have a little bit of a different taste across the two platforms. And now, of course, now that you're playing Battlefield 3, everybody knows, can see what's the same. But no, this time, Danger Close in charge of everything top to bottom. And they have some people that have defected from DICE and come over and are helping on the team, and which I think has done nothing but increase the level of talent that's in the engine and using Frostbite to the fullest extent.
I look forward to it, and as we mentioned, I don't know how much we can say about it, but we are going to Seattle at the end of this month, and we're going out there for PAX Prime, and of course we are going to try to get as much stick time as we can on Medal of Honor Warfighter, so stay tuned for an update on that, which of course the game drops in October. I'm really excited about it. We'll see what we can find out about that.
Since I'm a paratrooper, and I'm known for, I'd rather ask for forgiveness and permission. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell people here on your show, we are getting a look at Medal of Honor Warfighter while we're at PAX.
I think I just got an exclusive. I'm not sure.
I won't say to what end or when or how or all that kind of stuff, but we're going to get some access to the game and the development team that isn't going to be available to other people at PAX. And so we should have some great information. Some awesome stuff should be coming out either during PAX or directly after PAX. So definitely stay tuned.
Now I'm just giddy because, I've known about it and I can't tell anybody about it. You and I were talking yesterday, and I discovered that at the Christensen household, some folks play Monopoly. Some folks, obviously, they play the video games, and they sit around with their kids, and they, they read Mark Twain. You, sir, made me aware of a game that has enlightened me, to say the least. I found myself walking out on the porch today. And immediately I started evaluating my neighborhood. Tell people exactly what we were talking about yesterday and the game that you and your family play sometime.
All right. So this is going to cement the psychopath in me. We have a game called Zombie Apocalypse. And of course, zombies are popular between Call of Duty and AMC, Walking Dead, all this. Zombies are everywhere. So the joke around town is this: when's the zombie apocalypse going to come? So we turned it into a game here at the house, and I have a 16 and a 14-year-old, and so what we do is, to make them think tactically, we say, if the zombie apocalypse happened right now, what would you do? Where would you go? What people are good for certain skills? Where would you go to get things? Like if your water stopped working, what would you do to get that? And then if we go someplace, as I was telling you before, we go to Walmart. You evaluate where you're at. If it happened now, because it's not always going to happen when you're at the house or in a bunker somewhere, it's going to happen in a weird place. So we just look around and we say, I would go here, grab that, take these, steal that. And one of the things that we do that gets a little creepy, but it's funny, is that you evaluate the people around you. So your neighbors. So these are people that you wave to every day or, and what if the zombie apocalypse happens? Obviously, you can't protect everyone. So there's a couple of different classes of people. There's the neighbors with skill sets that are going to be valuable in a post-apocalyptic zombie apocalypse. And there's other going to be people that you're probably going to shoot in the leg and use them as bait or meat for the zombies while you and your family get away.
Oh, gosh.
So that I have a 16 or 14-year-old who at any given moment you could stop and say, the zombie apocalypse has just happened. What do you see? And they'll seriously answer you.
Abandoned car. There's gas. There's probably water in the... I would see, and I swear, dude, it has changed my life. In a 24-hour period, I definitely, I look at people differently. I think of people differently. Try it at home, folks, especially if you're suburban. If you're suburban, there's always that one guy on the block. And you, of course, mentioned that you have a particular neighbor who maybe you guys don't gel philosophically, but... I think you said that he had some military experience or something.
He's my neighbor, and he has he's a bricklayer, so he has that union. He's got that union thing going, so he's a little more Democrat than I like. But this is a marketable skill. Somebody has a trade, so he's in. Wife, not so much. So you just look around, wow, this neighbor's got guns because he's a police officer or he's a former this or he's a... But as we said, I have one who's a former law enforcement, doesn't carry a gun, so now he's on the fence. Can we let him in because he's got some technical knowledge, or is he going to be out in the street with a gunshot wound in his leg, yelling and attracting the other zombies? So what I like about it is it is a humorous thing, but it's also a really kind of a cool tool. Military people tend to have a different mindset of things and awareness of a situation of an area. I personally don't like to go to places and then sit with my back to the group or an open door. It's weird, but I like to face the room.
Now, I
so if something happens, it comes your way, you see it. And I always look for where's the alternate exit. So if a fire breaks out or there's a gunman comes in there, what's going on? If I was in a theater and I was at Batman the other day. So you know what? I subconsciously take a look and say, where's the exits? Where would I go? And so this what this game kind of does is for my kids. It's funny, yes, but the serious part is that it makes them think, if something went to hell in a handbasket, what do you do? You know, paying attention to what's your environment.
By the way, I do the same thing. My family thinks that something's wrong with me, but I do not like sitting. Like if we go to a restaurant or something, I will not sit in the seat with my back to the door. You told me about that, man, and I swear it just changed my life. So, and I told you I was going to bring it up on the podcast, but I chastised Mark right before this interview. He was talking about going to the chiropractor. I hope you don't mind me mentioning that, but no. So I chastised him a bit and said, that's what you get for jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. But as he corrected me and said that the injuries came years later when he was just kind of sitting at a desk. So.
I've had all my good luck is jumping on a plane. It's never gotten hurt jumping out of a plane. Usually standing around. When I was in Saudi Arabia 20 some years ago now, for Desert Shield, Desert Storm, I was on the ground and a guy ran over my foot with a forklift. So jumping out of a plane, perfectly sane, easy to do, everybody's paying attention, laying around on the ground, people thinking they know what they're doing, and accidents happen. So who knows? I think jumping on the planes is a safer way to go.
When I meet you in Seattle, that's going to be part of our conversation, is I want to know what it's like to jump out of an airplane. You know, it's something that I see, it's always on people's bucket lists and something they want to do before they die, blah, blah, blah. And I don't have, you know, we talked about this. I'm not necessarily afraid of flying. I am afraid of crashing, which is a whole nother conversation.
But, fear of pain.
Exactly. But I just couldn't fathom. And even going further back, you know, you go further back to the Band of Brothers story. A lot of people don't understand why that group of guys was so significant, because they were ultimately the first paratroopers. Isn't that right?
Yep.
And so I just sit there and go, can you imagine, like, you're standing in line and getting your gear and you're signing up for whatever you're signing up for. And the next thing you know, they're like, hey, we want you to be a paratrooper. And a lot of those guys, if you watch the documentary, they say, we didn't even know what a paratrooper was. And then we found out, oh, it's jumping out of a perfectly good airplane.
I've had the pleasure of talking to a lot of those guys at conventions and things, and they'll tell you, they got in because they said, hey, well, you're going to get an extra $50. So the guys that turned out to be the glider riders, they signed up to be airborne just like anybody else, and they got segmented out to go do glider stuff.
Wow.
Which I think is crazier. I've talked to those guys, and signing up to crash is
signing up to crash. That sounds like my life story. I think I'm going to call my biography, my memoirs someday, I'm going to call it Signing Up to Crash. Like you said, you have to be kind of sure about yourself philosophically and everything else when you take that first step, because there's no turning back. You can't get halfway through it and go, uh-oh, I don't know if I want to do this.
Climbing back up the static line is usually frowned upon. It's about trust. It's about trust.
Personally, like I said, I've done a lot of crazy stuff in my life, but I just don't know that I would have the hardware, as it were, to to exit a perfectly good airplane. One more thing before you go, sir. I've done this with other guests, and I typically only do this with guests that I feel like that I would get a colorful set of answers here. And have you ever watched, or do
being
you...
Being set up.
Yeah, you are being set up. Have you ever watched Inside the Actor Studio with James Lipton?
I think I have seen that, yeah.
Okay, so he typically wraps up his interviews with a 10-question questionnaire. So here we go. This is a 10-question questionnaire to wrap things up, created by French TV personality Bernard Pivot. Your first question, Mr. Christensen. What is your favorite word?
Mayhem.
Ooh.
It's just cool.
It is cool.
It's usually the place that my people, the paratroopers, work out of. It's kind of like it's work. That's where we work, is out of mayhem.
Okay, what is your least favorite word?
Apathy. Apathy, yeah. For me, doing nothing is an action in itself, and it's bad. I don't like the people who would let everyone else do things or have that attitude of, well, this is just how it's been done. If you're not moving, then I don't want to say that someone's useless, but to me, apathy is probably one of the worst traits you can have.
Apathy? I don't care for it. You see what I did there? You see what I did there?
I saw it.
As Pappy Fury used to say, if you don't hunt, you don't eat.
There you go.
What turns you on?
Wow, there's no more to that? Holy crap.
question mark.
Wow. Man, my wife is off the continental shelf. I got to be careful. What turns me on? Anything exciting, I guess just mentally, I'm not even going to go the sexual place. It's just what turns you on. I guess anything that is just new and exciting, pushing the envelope, trying to do something new. I was out this weekend shooting with my son and putting a shotgun in a 16-year-old's hands for the first time and realizing you're responsible. That'll turn you on in a completely different way.
Okay, what turns you off?
I guess all these questions are going to be the pros and cons. What turns me off? Ignorance. I cannot suffer fools. I guess that's as clean as I can make that one.
Typically, I when you have people that are screwing up, I usually separate them into two categories, ignorance or apathy. Some folks just don't know, and some folks just don't care.
And in my game, those are the meat. Those are people who are zombie meat. That's it.
What is your favorite curse word?
I guess, you know what? The all-American F-bomb. You know, you got to throw that out every so often. It gets attention.
I have asked five people, I think, I've given five people this questionnaire, and almost every one of them have said the F-word, and only one of them have actually said the F-word.
Yeah, so. We're all too polite. Give me a couple of my paratrooper friends, and you'll hear it over and over and over.
Eduardo Vasconcelos, he was one of those that he didn't care to go ahead and just say it. But So anyway, let's see. What sound or noise do you love?
Sound or noise, really? Probably in the game world, you probably heard the sound of the A-10 Warthog. as a drop zone clearing tool, the A-10 is probably the best thing to hear.
It does have a very distinct sound in real life and in most of the games that I've experienced it in. In contrast, I think I know what the answer is going to be here, but what sound or noise do you hate?
Incoming fire. The whistle of mortar rounds.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I'm trying to give this this full military technical consultant thing just my full attention. I guess we haven't talked about it. On my full-time job, I build websites. So trying to do this military technical consulting thing and all of it that it entails and kind of moving into trying to do ranges and, you know, actually teach some tactical stuff. That's, I guess, that gets me moving.
What profession would you not like to do? And this could be a long list, but just give us one.
I'm a big fan of Dirty Jobs, if you've ever seen that show.
Love
it. The one where he's clearing septic fields. That's on my list of things I never want to ever do.
You have nothing but love for the folks who do it, obviously. But yeah, I'm the same way.
Oh yeah, no, awesome people. But never going to do that.
Okay, and finally, here's your last question. If heaven exists, Mark, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Hoo-ah. Because that means he gets it. And I think with as much crazy stuff as I've done in my life and intend to do, I certainly know that he's watching out over our shoulders. Because if it wasn't for that, I think we'd be in a world of trouble.
Man, thank you, dude. Thank you for coming by. And there's one more thing. I almost forgot this, and we talked a little bit about it. But really quickly, tell us about the charity thing you got going on.
Oh, so this Saturday, the 18th, we're doing the Game On 24-hour marathon for the Go Vets Foundation. And the Go Vets Foundation is a foundation dedicated, it started up recently. It's dedicated to generating funds and getting veterans, guys that have recently separated from the military or have been out, such as myself, and get them the vocational training and business training to start up businesses and get the college degrees that they need to take what they learned in the military and turn it into valuable new businesses and job-making opportunities. And so we're just trying to get attention for this foundation. I think it's a great endeavor. And as somebody who will probably be benefiting from something like that, because this business thing you kind of get thrown into and you have to learn on the fly. So we're just going to do what we do in game, and we're just trying to raise funds and attention for this thing and hopefully help out a bunch of vets who might be otherwise what I call underemployed and get them into the workforce.
Exciting stuff, and I'm sure they can find the link there on your website and all the information for that.
Absolutely. You can go to govetsfoundation.org and you can find for the GoVets program, and you'll see the Game On 24-Hour Marathon is there.
Okay, man. Really exciting stuff. Get out there and support those who have supported you, ladies and gentlemen. Please do that. And as usual, Mark, thank you, sir, for everything that you do, man, whether it's with gaming and beyond. You're a heck of a guy, man, and I really appreciate it. OffDutyGamers.com, where can they find you on Twitter and all that good stuff?
Everything's OffDutyGamers. We got OffDutyGamers.com. We're at Twitter. We're at OffDutyGamers. Facebook / OffDutyGamers. So we try to make it easy.
Right on.
I got infantry to deal with, so hey, simple.
Keep it simple, stupid. Tons of fun, man. Thank you for coming by. Thank you for your unique perspective on everything, man. And
absolute pleasure.
And I will see you at the end of August. I can't wait.
Yeah, 31st.
All right, who else, sir? So as we wrap this thing up, I do want to remind everybody, if you are one of the lucky few that will have access to PAX Prime coming up end of August, 1st of September, we are going to be there live in Seattle. So look for us. We're going to be somewhere in the vicinity. Also, I just want to thank Mark, and I want to thank CSUN and everybody at Electronic Arts for helping all of this happen. Great stuff coming up, guys. So keep your ears and eyes open. And of course, stay frosty. Watch your corners and all that stuff. But it's time for me to go. You can send your questions, comments, or suggestions to CommanderFury@UrgentFury.com. Please do that. Urgent Frequency is produced by Urgent Fury Holdings, LLC, and right here in the studio by Jaron Gross. Be sure to network with us on Twitter, Facebook, the official Urgent Fury blog, Urgent Fury Unleashed, and, of course, on YouTube and our Blip.TV channel. Time for me to go. 98 as we count down to 100. I'm Commander Fury. Keep your feet wet and your powder dry. Hoo-yah! Just another family clone. That's where we head today. It's just another kill.